Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hi, Susan, and happy, happy birthday to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Yes, this is the official birthday of Martin Luther King, Jr. This is a federal holiday observed every year on the third Monday of January, around the time of his actual birthday, which is January 15th.
We do have some wonderful guests joining us today, and they're going to help us celebrate this day and explore its meaning and history.
Davita Harden from Ames is with us, of the Ames Human Relations Committee, and a member of the Martin Luther King Day Celebration Committee.
Correct.
She'll give us a preview of this evening's festivities in Ames. Davita, since you are African American, whose life has spanned the time of segregation and the civil rights era, we would also like to ask you to share your memories of Dr. King and that time in this day.
Also, at the end of this hour, Hannah Dankpar from the Volunteer Center of Story County will give us an update on today's volunteer activities, since today is National Day of Service. So this is going to be a wonderful show.
Could you tell us about the celebration this evening for Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday?
The celebration will take place at the Ames Middle School, but we will start out the program at 6 p.m. with a birthday cake and social time. We will have the Ames High School Jazz Band performing, led by Andrew Buttermore. We're going to have smiles from the Ames Public Library. We're going to have the Boy Scouts Pack 275 handing out Martin Luther King Day bookmarks. Our MC will be Edna Clinton, president of NAACP. Our musical performance will be from Meeker and Edwards Elementary Schools, led by Charles Grimm. We will present our humanitarian award from the Ames Human Relations Commission. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Pamela Anthony, Dean of Students at ISU. Hannah will give us a message on service, and then we will close out. We'll close out the program by singing We Shall Overcome.
How long does the program usually last?
About an hour, 30 minutes, hour, mm-hmm. 40 minutes.
Are these programs generally well attended?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
That's wonderful. I understand that preparations for the day are pretty intense. Can you tell us a little bit about how many people are involved with the committee and what's involved in creating the program?
At least 15 people are represented by various organizations throughout the community. And it's been fun for me. This has been my first year in the planning committee. And we just get together and we talk about how the vision, how we want it to go, what we need to do to make it happen. Monday, we had our walkthrough at the Ames Middle School. It went very well. We have a good support staff with the Ames Community Schools. They're going to help us out with all of the logistics and sounds. I wouldn't use the word intense, not for me. It's just been a learning experience and getting to know people in the community that I work with.
And it's the whole community you've been working with, too. Isn't that right?
Yes, trying to involve as many people and agencies in the community. I think it's a very good thing.
We had to connect with Atlanta as well today. Since Atlanta is Dr. King's home, the home of his congregation, the Ebenezer Baptist Church, was there and was also the location, the headquarters for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, spearheading the campaigns of the civil rights movement. So we're fortunate in community radio to have friends everywhere. And Heather Gray is with us from Atlanta, Georgia, WRFG, Radio Free Georgia Community Radio. And she worked with Mrs. Coretta Scott King and the Nonviolence Center in Atlanta. And so, Heather, you've been working extensively for racial economic justice in the aftermath of the civil rights movement. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning.
It's great to have you with us. And we're here with Davida Harden.
Yes.
Davida is a member of the committee that is planning the events today, and she's also with the Ames Human Relations Committee here. Davida, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburb of Little Rock, Arkansas, about 10 miles in rural county.
So Little Rock considers itself part of the South?
Very much so. Okay. Think of the events of 1957.
Yeah.
So, so both you and Heather have lived a life where you are able to remember the days of segregation to some extent. You were both children then.
Yes.
Would you share some of your memories of what that was like?
I wish I had a happy story to tell you, but I don't. Most of my childhood was centered around fear because of the pictures that I would see on television coming out of Birmingham and Selma. So as a child, my frame was, this is going to happen to me, because at the time we were referred to as colored. I was a colored girl in the South. Stories of what happened at Central High School with the troops coming in 1957. My family and I stayed in a small community that was pretty segregated, but we had to venture out and go to the store, to the post office, or the hardware store, and those owners were white. So I had a fear that something bad was going to happen to me. My father didn't allow me to go by myself. He kind of always went with me and made sure I was okay and taught me how to present myself and how what to look for and what to do and what not to do. So I would just have to summarize and say it was fear. I grew up in fear.
You were a target and you could be hurt at any time.
At any time, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Heather?
Yes.
Can you share from your perspective how you experienced segregation as a child?
Well, I was raised as in a white middle-class, upper-middle-class family. My father was a professional teaching at Emory University, actually. And so I came, you know, it's interesting, I came down from Canada and when I was very young, when I was six, actually, to Atlanta. And I remember we spent the night on the Emory University campus, and I woke up in the morning and I looked out the window and I saw this beautiful black woman. She was wearing these incredibly colorful clothes, and this was the first time I'd seen someone who was black, actually. I mean, there were probably about two black folks living in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and Western Canada in the 1950s. But it didn't take me long to realize that black folks were treated differently, and then for the life of me, I could not figure out what was happening here. I spent most of my years growing up in Atlanta trying to figure out this dilemma. But this was in the heart of the Jim Crow years, a lot of what Davida's talking about here. So, you know, you would go into restaurants or you would go into stores where there were water fountains for whites and for, quote, coloreds, right? I remember going into Sears Roebuck on Ponce de Leon here in Atlanta, Georgia, with my mother, and I saw this colored water fountain, and I thought, oh, colored water, that's probably better than what we drink. And I went running over to it. My mother grabbed my hand, you know, not to do that. I could remember also, Davida, you know, getting on buses in Atlanta and black folks needing to sit in the back of the bus. It was really quite a time. I also remember hearing later on, I didn't know this until much later on, that Dr. King was speaking at the Quaker meeting, which was not too far from where I lived, actually, but we were never told about this. I don't know. There's just so many incredible memories.
Davida, the segregated water fountains are kind of, you know, the image that has been so strongly associated with segregation. Did you experience that as well?
Yes, I did. But I only saw the signs. I cannot specifically remember actually being told not to drink somewhere, but I do remember the signs. Mm-hmm. And as far as the bus goes, because we lived in rural area out in the county, the only bus we had was segregated. But the bus driver was white, mm-hmm. and he was very mean to us. He was very...
He treated you badly.
Yeah, very snarly. You know, mm-hmm. he was very surly, and like he didn't want to be there, but So you could feel that, you know.
Mm-hmm. But. Did you have any friendships or connections with people that were white?
The only friend I had that was white was the post office clerk. Hmm. And she was a very nice lady and energetic and very welcoming. I attended school, segregated school, from first through seventh grade. So I was 13 years old when I first, you know, attended an integrated school. And it was the fall of 1968, after Dr. King had been assassinated. So I was a very bitter 13-year-old. I was very angry because I didn't want to be there, and they had killed my hero. Someone had killed my hero.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. How did your parents explain segregation to you?
My father just told me, and I asked him, why do they not like us? Why are they so mean to us? And his words were, that's just the way of the world. I don't think he really knew how to explain it to me. That's why I have such a deep appreciation now for education and being able to explain yourself. And my father came through a time when it was the focus on working and providing for his family and not so much as education as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
But he did his best to prepare me for this world. He just didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, African Americans were not able to vote.
Exactly.
Can you explain that?
I don't have a lot of memory on that, other than when the Voting Rights Act was signed by President Johnson. My father said, now we can vote, but I don't recall him actually voting. And I do believe it was because he didn't know how, he didn't know how to enjoy that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I wanted to make sure that my children did do, was to register and vote. So.
Mm-hmm. Heather, can you give us some background as to why people were not able to vote prior to the Voting Rights Act?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, blacks were supposed to be able to vote. This was one of the amendments passed after the Civil War. However, the states still had rights to impose whatever they wanted to prevent people from voting. So in the South in particular, there were all these poll taxes and tests that people needed to take that were really more stringent for blacks than for whites. So the South was very successful in their Jim Crow era, actually, in denying this right to vote for black folks. So when DeVita was talking about the Voting Rights Act, actually the Civil Rights Law passed in 1964, and then the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965, which changed that. It meant that the South could no longer discriminate against blacks who were attempting to vote, and it radically changed things in the South. So it basically put more federal oversight over the right to vote, basically.
So the right to vote.
And deny the states the right to deny voters through all of these stringent tests and so forth that they required.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say something about my memory
okay.
of that period where I was right here in Ames. But what I remember was, and from a period even a little earlier before we came here, was hearing about and reading about the Freedom Riders, the people from the North who went down to support people from the South, blacks from the South, who were trying to register voters and who were agitating for that. Outside agitators is what the Southerners call those Freedom Riders and people coming down from the North. And this really peaked in Selma, Alabama. And the symbol of this, what I remember most emotionally is standing and singing, "We Shall Overcome," with our arms crossed and swaying side to side. And so for today, I tried to find a version of that that sounded like what I thought "We Shall Overcome" should sound like. And I found this version of "We Shall Overcome," and I guess you're going to sing that tonight, right?
Yes, we are.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're speaking today about Dr. Martin Luther King's official birthday, which is a federal holiday. I'm one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Susan Franson, and with us here in the studio is Davida Harden from the organizing team for the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday tonight at the Ames Middle School. Also, Heather Gray is with us by telephone from Atlanta, Georgia, the headquarters for the civil rights movement in those days. And Heather is from WRFG, Radio Free Georgia in Atlanta.
We've just heard We Shall Overcome from an album called Freedom Songs, Selma, Alabama. It turns out this is a historic live recording made in 1965 at the funeral of Jimmie Lee Jackson, a civil rights protester who was shot and killed by Alabama state troopers on February 18, 1965. And that's the violence I was alluding to earlier. And we were aware of that, even up here in Ames, Iowa. We knew people who'd gone south. A lot of people through the north felt we were part of that. So we were watching.
In Alabama, local civil rights activists have been campaigning for the right to vote in the towns of Selma and Marion nearby. And in January of 1965, Dr. King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference arrived to support this campaign. And they came to the area because the law enforcement officials in the area were known to be so violent and brutal. King felt that their brutality would be dramatic enough to get national attention and add pressure to President Lyndon Johnson and Congress to pass the voting rights legislation. In the process, the field secretary for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, James Orange, was arrested in Marion. On February 18th, there was a night march to protest this arrest, and Jimmie Lee Jackson marched with his sister, mother, and his 82-year-old grandfather. Local police and state troopers violently broke up the march, and Jimmie took refuge at a local cafe. The police followed them into the cafe, and Jackson was shot in the stomach while trying to protect his mother from being beaten. He died a few days later. This was a pivotal event in inspiring the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama state capital. So these famous marches from Selma, which ended in violence, known as Bloody Sunday, are credited largely for creating attention and momentum that resulted in the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 later in August. So this piece of music that we just heard really is about a pivotal moment in the civil rights movement. Davida, you spoke earlier about your memory of the passage of the Voting Rights Act, and you said that in reality, when it happened, it didn't really affect your family immediately. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. Seeing things played out on a national stage, watching television, and how did it affect us, you know, as a family living in rural southern Arkansas, how did that, it didn't trickle down to us. It didn't make it to us. As I said, we saw the violence. We saw what was going on, but incorporating into our everyday life just wasn't something that my family did, unfortunately. So it was like an outside world, like an out-of-body experience. It was happening, but it wasn't happening.
And were you aware that this was something that was relevant to your family?
Yes, mm-hmm. We were excited. Because we believed things were going to change through the violence that we saw on TV, all of the national attention. We believed that things were going to be different. Now, how they were going to be different, we didn't talk about that. I don't remember us talking about that. It's just that my father and uncles, mostly men, were very excited that this was happening. And sitting there watching watching my father, watching President Johnson sign that, it was, you know, shouts of victory. But how did it play into our everyday life?
You know. Well, did you have anything at churches you went to or gatherings where you, for example, where you sang We Shall Overcome or had support, interior support? Obviously, you weren't marching for voting rights in Arkansas.
Unfortunately, we did not attend church. You know, sad to say, but we did not. It wasn't in our family makeup at that time, you know, the importance of faith.
Well, the reason that I mentioned that is what I remember was the number of churches that were burned down, say, in Mississippi and Alabama, because they were places where activists were going.
I will share this with you. The bombing that occurred in Birmingham, the four little girls died, made me afraid to go to church. I didn't want to go. again, I'm thinking something bad is going to happen to me. In the mind of a child, all these horrible things are happening, and I didn't want that to happen to me or mine. So I didn't question why we didn't attend a church. There were certainly churches in our neighborhood, in our community. But seeing those images on TV, it's like, you know, I really don't want to go because bad things happen. It may happen to us here. The little town I grew up in is called Sweet Home, Arkansas. And we were 10 miles outside of Little Rock, close enough to feel the brutality, you know, the racism, you know, and far enough to be kind of secured and safe. And I just wanted to be safe and didn't want to venture out of my little, you know, my little area.
Hmm. Heather, do you remember the passage of the Voting Rights Act?
Yes, to a degree. I mean, I was older then, involved also at that point in civil rights work, but also anti-war. So there was a lot of stuff going on in the 1960s.
You came to know James Orange, who was kind of catalyst of all this. Can you describe a little bit about the man and other members of the Southern Leadership Conference that, and what kind of people these were?
Yeah, James was this huge guy. He was called, people called him the gentle giant. Davida, it's interesting hearing your comments about being young and how to address some of these issues. And I know that James was asked by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which was the organization created by Dr. King as the activist arm of the movement. He was given the responsibility to encourage young folks to be marching in Birmingham, actually. And so he was renowned for that work. So when you see these young children in jail, that was largely thanks to James getting them involved in movement work.
And the strategy was to involve young people so that it would gain more national attention, right?
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the things that's also important, we haven't said much about or anything really this morning so far about Bloody Sunday, which was the march from Selma to Montgomery, but I think what was really also central then was the role of media in reporting on this, showing these photos. It really made such a radical difference and shifted the attitude, I think, in the United States toward the struggles that people face in the South. And so James was just a leader for so many of us, ultimately, and he kept the flame burning. He died in 2008, but, you know, throughout, ever since the 1960s and on up, we would honor the work of the activists in Selma and in Alabama, and I went to quite a few commemorations of that march from Selma to Montgomery, led by James. I remember James leading the way also by encouraging us to chant this, that, and the other, and one of my favorite ones is, ain't gonna let nobody turn us around, you know. He ended up doing a lot of work in the labor movement. He worked for the AFL-CIO, but wherever James went, anywhere, there are all these groupies around him. He was always mentoring, always teaching. Hmm. When Dr. King was killed in 1968, it was James who helped organize that funeral. You all might recall Dr. King's casket going through the streets of Atlanta being pulled by mules on a cart. It was James who organized that mule cart, actually. So anyway, here in Atlanta, we all honored him for his great work. But he actually, when he was on his deathbed in Atlanta, he was calling me, Heather, you need to do this, that, and the other. You know, he just never stopped. So he was just this wonderful, wonderful guy.
Heather, there's one other thing we wanted to ask you before you leave us. Last year, the Supreme Court essentially began rolling back the Civil Rights Act of 1965. Can you explain a little bit what that means and what the consequences are?
Some of the consequences we're not absolutely sure of at this point. However, it's important to note that the 1965 Voting Rights Act is probably one of the most important civil rights laws ever passed in the United States. And what was really central to the Voting Rights Act was Section 5. Of the Voting Rights Act, which required states and counties to pre-clear with the federal government, with the federal courts, changes that they were making on requirements for voting. Okay, so Now, there are certain states in the United States that were designated as being required, actually, to pre-clear the changes that they made in various voting requirements. And these states, there were almost all of the southern states were listed because they had this history of discrimination, right? There were some various counties and around the country also that were placed on that list that were required, actually, to pre-clear any changes they made in voting requirements. The Supreme Court struck down that pre-clearance requirement, which is really a concern because what happens now is that when states or counties make changes in their voting requirements, then there has to be a period of time that will then demonstrate whether or not this seemed to have discriminated against people in that county or that state. They don't have to have anything pre-cleared with the courts before they implement these policies, these changing voting rights voting requirement policies. Now, this could take years. So in the meantime, there could be discrimination that was taking place in as far as the rights of people in their voting patterns. I need to say also, Ursula, that what we're seeing in the South right now is that there are changing immigration patterns in the South, right? We're seeing a lot more Latinos coming into the South. And the feeling amongst some organizers in the South is that the Southern whites are not wanting to allow these Latinos to be empowered because it will mean that whites in the South will have less control over the vote in the South. I mean, this would be impacting far more than if they just were concerned about the black vote, right? So it'll mean that whites will become all the more the minority in the South. And the feeling is that this is why they wanted to make sure, or they were going to try to do what they could to dilute Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act so that they could implement whatever they wanted in terms of voter ID or whatever they could do to dilute the vote. Now, you're talking about the impact, Ursula. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next national election. I'm very concerned about it. So, I don't know. We'll just have to see. We'll just have to see. Because basically these states and counties no longer have to worry about federal oversight. Mm-hmm. You know, they can implement something, and then we have to wait to see the impact of these changes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a concern.
Heather, the proposal was made to make Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a national holiday. Could you talk a little about how that happened? And I guess some states adopted it earlier than others. What's your take on that?
Yes, well, I was working with Mrs. King at the time. I was directing the nonviolent program in Atlanta at the time. So I just need to tell you all, it was just so exciting. I would attend these meetings with Mrs. King and others at the King Center, and board members coming to these meetings as well, to talk about how the plans were coming, actually, for Congress to pass the bill that allowed for this to become a national holiday. It was a struggle. You know, the Southern senators were not overly thrilled about it, of course. So the first holiday took place in 1986. I was here in Atlanta at the time. We had all these celebrations in Atlanta. There was a whole week of activities. I was asked to organize the International Anti-Apartheid Conference here in Atlanta for that week, which was just really exciting. But around the country, yes, it's true that some states chose not to honor Dr. King. I'm not sure what the status of it is right now. I think that most states do have this as a federal holiday, but I know there's still a pushback in some areas of the country.
Heather, how did Mrs. King feel about it?
Oh, she was just thrilled to death. It was just so exciting, I need to tell you. And, you know, that week, at the King Center, women came in from all over the country and all over the world, actually, to be with her and to support her for that week. It was just really quite amazing. It was really an exciting time.
So how was the first celebration held?
You know, there were all kinds of forums and events. I was primarily working on the International Anti-Apartheid Conference, but there were marches, there were all kinds of issues being addressed and forums throughout the whole week. It was just a celebratory event. And ever since then, in Atlanta, there's been some kind of march to honor Dr. King on the holiday, where all kinds of civil rights activists are involved in helping to organize it. So, yeah, we honor Dr. King here for sure. And in fact, the King Center, which is where Dr. King's body lies in state, along with Mrs. King, and there's a civil rights museum there as well, is probably one of, well, in Atlanta, certainly, it's one of the most popular sites for tourists, but I think it ranks one of the most important sites in the United States as well.
Yeah.
For tourists to visit, yeah.
I've been there. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
Heather, thank you so much for joining us today. You've spent a lot of time on the cell phone with us, and we really appreciate it. Thanks for bringing Atlanta up to here to Ames, Iowa. I hope you're having a little bit warmer weather than we are.
I think we probably are.
It's
61 today. Unbelievable.
No 61 today here. Enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, there is one thing I want to say about Bloody Sunday.
Okay.
And I remember Jesse Jackson actually at a meeting talking about a conversation he had with the governor at the time, and he was asking him. He said, "Well, why did you ask these state troopers to be at that foot of Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma?" So he said, "Well, he said, I knew as they marched down Highway 80, actually, toward Montgomery, that they would be accosted by white farmers and so forth along the line. And so Jesse said, well, why didn't you have those troops addressing or attacking or stopping these whites along Highway 80 from attacking voters who were demand, or people who are attempting to vote, to demand their rights to vote, you know?" And George Wallace couldn't answer that question. I mean, so that still is something that I think we all need to address, you know? Mm-hmm. When people are demanding their rights under the Constitution, they should be protected. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that with you.
Heather, I just want to say thank you for sharing your memories and of what happened. You were actually there. I really appreciate it. Nice talking with you.
Yeah.
It's
thank
my
you.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Heather. You.
Yes, thanks.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Local Talk Community Radio, and we have now one more song, and that was set up beautifully by several things that were said by Heather. She mentioned that the song that James Orange sang was "Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Round," and that he was organizing young people. Well, this song is by two little girls, and it is there. It is "Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Round," and the words, though, are so important that I want to read them before you hear the girls sing them. "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me round, oh Lord. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me round, oh Lord. Ain't gonna let me turn me round. I'm gonna keep on a walking, gonna keep on a talking, marching up to freedom land." The second verse starts, "Ain't gonna let no tear gas turn me round." The third verse, "Ain't gonna let no horses turn me round." And the fourth verse, "Ain't gonna let George Wallace turn me round." And you heard George Wallace was the governor of Alabama with his state troopers. So,
marching up the street all night, ain't gonna let no tear gas turn me round, oh Lord, turn me round, oh Lord, turn me round. keep on talking, marching up to freedom. And I got a little horse. Turn me round, the Lord, turn me round. Keep on walking, keep on talking. My feet up to freedom. Ain't gonna let your twilight turn me round. Oh Lord, turn me round. Oh Lord, turn me round. Ain't gonna let your twilight turn me round. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking. My feet up to freedom.
Now, those girls must have been just about the age you were, maybe even a little younger.
It sounds that way, yeah. I can relate. I definitely can relate to them, yeah.
So, now, do you have any memories of that from that period of Martin Luther King?
Oh, yes, I do. As I've said earlier, watching him on television infused me with what I now know was energy and passion to make things better. He was my hero. I loved his voice, as we all do. You know, just something about when he came on TV, he had my attention at 8 years old. The things that Dr. King said, I live today. You know, I'm judged by the content of my character, not the color of my skin. I walk proudly in that. And just knowing that Dr. King did live, he did serve in such a unselfish way, enables me to come to Ames from Little Rock, Arkansas, and get involved in the community, to serve, to do what I can to make sure that Dr. King's dream continues on, and that it was very, very real. What he saw in America was very real. So, I'm very proud of the work he did, and I'm very proud to be able to be part of the Martin Luther King Day celebration here in Ames and to teach my children and my grandchildren the importance of character, integrity, honesty, the things that Dr. King stood for, social justice, civil justice, all those things are very important today.
Davida, can you describe a little bit what his character meant to you in relation to this fear you described that you grew up with?
So you have to understand, I grew up in the 1960s, television. African Americans were not on television. There were no role models. There were no people to look up to admire, you know, from that point of view. So to see Dr. King stand in the face of what I'm going to call the enemy and demand justice, demand that he is and all of us are treated equally and with the same level of respect. This was a new norm. This was something different in where I live. You just didn't do that. Black people were treated differently, very, very differently. So to see Dr. King demand that we are all treated equally, it was inspirational, very inspirational. I remember there were certain ladies in our neighborhood who I thought were just eloquent. They were, you know, carry themselves in such a way. You asked me earlier about the impact of the voting right and did people really register to vote? Did I know anyone? Yes, I did. There was at least three ladies who were elderly, I would say, and they would talk with such enthusiasm about the change, of course, through their lifetime. So it was the fear. Dr. King displaced that fear by giving me the courage and demanding the courage, you know, to say, I demand this. As I said earlier, 13 years old, going to a integrated school with white children for the first time, white teachers for the first time in my life. I was angry. I was bitter, but I knew that I could do it.
Did you discuss the civil rights movement at home?
No. No, we had a change of events in my family that took the attention away from the Dr. King. Mm-hmm. It was my dad got really sick, and so he was my voice. He helped me explain life to me. So after his illness, and it just things changed. My family changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure.
We hope that the event that you've been working so hard on tonight is as wonderful as it must be.
I do believe that it will be. The first time I attended an event, I think it was 2011. And I'm like, okay, this is not quite what I expected, but it's something. And the next time I went, it was a little bit better. I said,
if you want to see things improve, if you want to see something get better, then you have to go and lend your voice and lend your help to in order to make it be what you want it to be. As I said earlier, working with a group of people that I'm working with, they have a passion to want to celebrate and honor, and I appreciate that.
So this is an event that's growing and developing into something.
Yes,
more.
I'm going to go out there and say, yes, it is growing. I do believe incorporating the children, if we see, is one of the ways we can make that happen. And the more children come, the more parents come, the more educated they become, the more enthused. And in our world, our society is still in need of change. Mm-hmm. And I think people like that.
That's great, because children really played an important role in the Civil Rights Movement.
Exactly, exactly.
Could you describe again what's going to happen tonight and where? And
we're going to be at the Ames Middle School on Mortensen Road. The event starts at 6 o'clock p.m. We're going to have birthday cake. We're going to have the high school jazz band playing for us. So we're going to have smiles from the Ames Public Library there to interact with the children, take pictures. We're going to have students from Meeker and Edwards Elementary School rendering music. We're going to present our Ames Humanitarian Award this evening. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Pamela Anthony, Dean of Students from ISU. Our MC will be Edna Clinton. And we will have message on service from Hannah.
And Hannah is here. Hi, Hannah. Hannah Dankbar from
Hi.
The Volunteer Center of Story County. And before we go, Hannah's going to give us a report on volunteering that's happening today, since today is also a National Day of Service.
All right, yeah. So today is a National Day of Service. It didn't become a day of service until about 9 years after MLK Day was declared a federal holiday. So it is marketed as a day on, not a day off. And I'm an AmeriCorps member at the Volunteer Center, so I partnered with two other AmeriCorps members from Access, and we organized 11 service projects throughout the day, and we're going to be having over 130 volunteers working throughout the day. The first project starts at 9 a.m., and the last one's going to wrap up around 7 tonight.
And what kind of projects?
We have people all over Ames. People are going to be helping with some cleaning and maintenance at Access and ERP, serving a meal at Food at First and working in their free market. People are coming into the Volunteer Center to make hats and scarves for area shelters. People are also doing some activities with some kids at Laverne Apartments today, sorting clothes at Goodwill and Ballard Community Clothes Pantry. People are all over.
That's wonderful. And Hannah, before you go, any news about other volunteer opportunities after today?
Well, you can always go to our website at vcstory.org. After today, the Volunteer Center is going to be really working on Stash the Trash, which is going to be coming up in March. So keep your eyes open for that one.
Okay, excellent.
And there's also another event going on. The Volunteer Center of Story County and the Sustainable Agriculture Student Association partnered together to create a discussion on backyard beekeeping, and that will be at the 130 South Sheldon behind Dunkin' Donuts in the auditorium from 12:30 to 2, and food will be provided.
So. Excellent.
And that is Becca Brown, our technician, and also, are you the beekeeper, or are you just organizing it?
Oh, no, I'm an AmeriCorps Vista, and we're just organizing. There will be a state apiarist there and also a local backyard beekeeper.
Davida, are there any other memories or thoughts you'd like to share with us before we wrap up this show?
The thought I'd like to share is that, as I said, growing up in rural Arkansas, I would have never envisioned that I would be sitting here in Ames, Iowa, having this conversation with you all. And I attribute that to the vision that Dr. King had. And so where he had a dream, you know, for America, for us, and I am living proof of that dream. So I'm very, very thankful.
Well, we're all thankful to Dr. Martin Luther King, because it's for our enrichment.
It certainly
that this is something that has come to pass.
Yes.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and today we've been talking about Martin Luther King Day. Again, the celebration in Ames tonight is at 6 o'clock at the Ames Middle School at 3915 Mortensen Road. and the Ames High School Band, a jazz band, and Edwards and Meeker School choruses are featured, and the keynote speaker is Dr. Pamela Anthony, Dean of Students at ISU. We've been speaking with Davida Harden, a member of the planning committee for the events, and with Heather Gray from WRFG Community Radio in Atlanta, Georgia.
We also got a report on the National Day of Service in Story County from Hannah Dankbar, volunteer from the Volunteer Center, and from Becca Brown on beekeeping. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison and Becca Brown. Music you heard included We Shall Overcome by Workers at the Selma Mass for Jimmy Lee Jackson from the CD Freedom Songs, Selma, Alabama, and Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Round by Two Little Girls from the same album. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of also past guests and resource contact information. You will find lists of our guests and contact information for the organizations we spoke about today and other resources mentioned on our shows.
We appreciate your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com.
That's khoiradio@gmail.com.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com with talk in the subject line.
Your participation as the audience is, as always, what makes KHOI possible. So, Susan, if a radio show happens and nobody listens, was there a broadcast?
See you again on the radio.
Because it should never be just because some cannot. scream as clear as he.